All right. Hello. Hey, this is Steve Baker, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist, and I have a special guest with me today, one of the J6 defendants. His name is J.D. Rivera. And you go by J.D. or Jesus?
Either.
We'll go by J.D. today. Just to give you a quick background on J.D., he's an independent filmmaker, cinematographer, content creator. Also, I guess you were in the Marine Corps for 10 years. Is that right? From 2002 to 2012. You're married. You've got 6 kids. Holy God. Are you a good Catholic? Is that what the deal is there? Pretty much so. And you live in Pensacola, Florida. I have a sister that lives in the Pensacola area. So I've actually been down there several times in the last year. If I'd have known that we had a connection here related to January 6th, we would have done this in person on one of my trips there. On January 6th, JD was documenting the events that took place in DC. He's been in film since 2013 and actually has had his own film production company since 2018. And just, 14 days, 2 weeks later, on January 20th, the cops showed up at your door. You were arrested by the FBI for your participation in the events on January 6th. And when you were arrested, they took your computer, your phone, your hard drives, your SD cards, your camera. Basically, they took everything that you do your business with, how you make your living. And they took all of that away from you. I assume you've never gotten any of that back.
No, we've tried.
Well, JD, welcome. I do want to say real quick that I'm doing this much later than I wanted to do with you. I was hoping that maybe we could get this done a lot sooner because your trial is actually coming up here in just a few days, less than a week away. It's when we're recording this on Wednesday, June the 8th, and your trial is next Tuesday. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you're going to be, from what I understand, it's going to be a bench trial, not a jury trial, and it's going to be in DC. So you're going to have to go up there. Who is your judge for this trial?
Judge Colleen Catelli.
And I also understand that this is her first case to actually try, so related to January 6th.
At least so, yes.
Has she been handling other cases in terms of taking plea deals and that sort of thing?
You know, we had our status hearing on Monday, and she was talking about different hearings she's been taking, but I don't know if it was anything pertaining to January 6th or not.
Before we get into the nitty gritty and the details related to your specific case, tell me real quick how you're doing. I mean, you have a family. I mean, you have a wife, you have 6 kids. Obviously, your life has been turned upside down like so many others for the last year and a half, almost year and a half. Fortunately, like many of them, you're not sitting in a detention center in DC right now, solitary confinement. Yeah. But obviously, your charges did not rise to that level. But how has your life been turned upside down, and how have you handled this last 15 months or so?
The first few months were very difficult, actually, because it was people that we were really close to, specifically in our church, that actually turned us into the FBI. Those people are no longer at our church, obviously, but
wow.
You know, those first months were really difficult because we couldn't leave. We couldn't go anywhere. We were, you know, infamously known through Pensacola. Everywhere we went, we had P&J or WEAR would be on our tail, following us everywhere, knocking on our doors every morning. It was ridiculous for the most part, to be honest with you. For me, we are very humbled now. I'm a Christian, and it's my Christian faith that has helped us, me and my wife specifically, walk through this without stressing off it too much. We've literally put it in his hands and just go day by day at this point.
So you bring up an interesting point. You said it was members of your church that actually turned you in.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the case with many of the 800 plus people that have been charged and arrested. They've had friends, family, associates, classmates. This is actually the first time I've heard of someone from church turning one of their own parishioners in. Were these people that you had an association with, or were you friends with them?
You can say they were family, essentially. My wife grew up in this church, and these are people that babysitted my wife, and my wife ended up babysitting their kids at one point. We've had dinner with them. We've done it with them. These are people that I would never thought would have ever done anything like this, try to treat me as some sort of criminal because they had an obvious hate for Trump. And that hate went from him to us. Mm. And it's disheartening because these were people that, as a Christian, that we would go to them for spiritual healing, for kind of guide us in the right way because we knew they'd been through things. And you know, the worst part about it all was some of these individuals that did it, they gloated about it. Like they put it out on their TikToks and stuff that they turned us in specifically. And it's unfortunate that they think it's a joke. They think it's funny. You know, if it was me by myself, that's fine. But they put my entire family through this situation. They know who our family are. They help raise our kids through the church. They've watched our kids, like I said, and you know, they didn't care what they were doing to everybody in my family. Turning me in wasn't affecting just me. It's affecting my wife, who they knew from child, from birth, and our children, who they knew from birth. So it goes to show you the kind of mindset people have when they have so much hate in their lives.
So tell me, you know, as briefly as you can, why did you decide to go to DC on January 6, 2021? What was your reason for being there?
You know, before I went to January 6, I was doing a lot of the events where Trump was speaking at, and we were doing all those. I was going through, talking to the people, getting just basic interviews for everybody. You know, I wanted to show people the colorful side of the conservative side. You know, I was talking to the Asian community, the Black community, Hispanic community. I just wanted people to see that. So when everything happened and Biden ended up getting voted in, when we heard about the January 6th event happening, I decided that I wanted to go because this would be the last time that I got to see Trump speaking. And it was the last time that I was going to see all these influencers and people that I've grown to know that are conservatives in the same world of influence, that we were going to be able to have a time where we can get together like this on that grand of a scale. So I went there to ultimately just film and record and document everything I could to have something for my reels, for my film and everything else. Mm-hmm. And obviously I was there January 5th, filmed all that stuff. I had a group of people I was with. I was documenting stuff for them. And then January 6th happened, same thing. And then eventually at one point I had left them to go document what was actually happening at the Capitol, because I went there because I figured that there was going to be something big happening, but I didn't think anything at the Capitol. To be quite honest with you, I didn't really know there was anything going to be happening at the Capitol until that day. And I was going in hopes of capturing something as far as, you know, BLM, Antifa and the MAGA movement kind of doing something, because that's what it's been at every rally, essentially. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a clash of Antifa, BLM and MAGA supporters. And I thought that was going to be the stuff that I was going to be able to get to help, you know, use my video, my footage and everything to get that kind of story across. And as we all know, January 6th happened and everything at the Capitol happened. So I decided, you know, I came here anyways to document. If I don't, this is what sucks. I told my wife and everybody I was with, I said, look, I need to go get this. This is why I came. I came to document this stuff. If I don't go document this, I'm going to be kicking myself in the foot or in the butt later for not doing that. And doing the reverse, I'm doing it now because I didn't realize it was going to get me in the kind of trouble that I'm in right now.
Well, let's talk about the trouble that you're in real quick before we get into some details of what you saw and what you did that day, because I have your actual criminal complaint right here in front of me. I actually read it weeks ago. I read through the entire thing weeks ago. This is just the cover page here. And most people that have seen these interviews with J6 defendants and have, whether it's a podcast like this or short, quick, you know, blurbs on major networks or TV or cable news, they don't really understand what the absurdity of some of these charges are. So I'm going to actually read your four charges. And these are the basic four charges, or should I say the four charges that almost everyone has been charged with. Just to begin with, if you did literally nothing wrong that day, this is the four charges you got. And so okay. I want to read these. This is the first one: knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority. That was number one. Second charge is knowingly with intent to impede government business or official functions, engaging in disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. That's the second. The third is engaging in disorderly or disruptive conduct on Capitol buildings or grounds. And then the fourth and final charge is parading, demonstrating, or picketing in the Capitol buildings. Now, that's the four basic charges that everyone has been hit with. Now, if they did other things, if they were involved in altercations with law enforcement, if they did property damage or something else, then there were other things that were added. Some people have as many as 10 or 11 different charges. But this is the four basic things that people were hit with. Having said that, most people that have been hit with these four charges have taken a plea deal. And as a result of that, they've typically pled down to either one or at the most two of those four and have gotten off with a wrist slap. Why did you decide to go to trial and not take a plea deal?
knew I didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, taking these plea deals only helps out the prosecution when it comes to showing, oh, look how many people are taking plea deals because they've been being charged with something of this effect. Myself and another buddy of mine, we've talked over and over and over about it. And we've had times where like, let's just take the plea deal, be done with this. But what is that going to do? We have the four charges. I've seen what they have against me. And I could tell you at least three of the four of them should be automatically acquittals because you've seen the evidence that all I'm doing is recording. Right. I have cell phone in one hand, a camera in the other. Most of the evidence that they're using is irrelevant to my case that they're trying to use because it's stuff that happened that day. Other people breaking stuff and fighting police officers, again, irrelevant to my case. And to top it off, I was really upset that the day that I got arrested, the FBI made a statement on Twitter, and I have it as my bio, actually my screen bio, the picture, and it shows Jesus Rivera will be held accountable for the violent actions of January 6th, but not one of my charges that they charged me with is a violent charge. Right. So they're just making up whatever they can. And that's not me. You know, they're messing with my integrity. My integrity has been big for the longest time. I mean, since the Marine Corps, I joined the Marine Corps and they teach you about integrity. And that has always been one of my key things is when you try to mess with my integrity, that's where it bothers me the most. And it's my job to make sure that they know the truth. And regardless of whether they decide to find me guilty of anything, I'm still doing what I can to go into the courts and have them find it the correct way versus just saying, this is what I'm guilty of. We've seen what happened to these people who've pled guilty. Some people have pled guilty and served 2-3 months in jail. And it's just, it's ridiculous that they're doing this to anybody. And I don't agree with what's going on with this whole January 6th situation. I'm not saying that there aren't individuals that deserve to be found guilty for some things they did, because we know there were some very ridiculous people there, but the amount of individuals that are being charged for the same four basic charges like me is just a bit ridiculous at this point.
Let's get into the actual details of your circumstance. All right. Because obviously I'm intimately involved. As you know, I have been threatened with charges myself for my coverage on January 6th that day. Unlike you, they waited 9.5 months before I was even contacted by the FBI. And then I was off a voluntary interview. And then it wasn't until several weeks later that they decided that they would file charges against me. They did not. And we don't know why, and we're not asking. So we're just taking it as a blessing. And we're going to go with that. It's not to say that this won't happen eventually, because it still could in my case. But nevertheless, in your circumstance, it was only 2 weeks later that they actually showed up at your door. Let's just go walk me through this briefly. Was it in the middle of the night? Was it a morning? What happened?
First thing in the morning, 7:30 in the morning. Let me give you a quick backstory on that, too, because I was the first person in Florida to be arrested. I was prior to DC, early December, I had an interview with another local news station, WKRG. I was trying to become one of their camera operators and it went really well. They knew that I was going to be going to DC. I explained to them that we had plans for the trip after the fact. Once we found out we were going, the conversation was, well, let's get some footage, see what's going on. And if anything happens, we got it. So once I get to DC, everything happens. On my way back home, January 7th, I get a phone call from the director and the main camera operator who was going to be my direct supervisor. They call me on the way home and they're super ecstatic and excited to let me know, hey, we want you on the team. I want to let you know that if you still want the job, you're absolutely hired. And I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's start kicking it off. So I went through the whole process. I got my information to them, new hire package. My date of hire was supposed to be January 18th. They wouldn't give me all my credentials and everything. And I kept asking for my credentials this entire time. So from the 8th all the way to the 20th, this was a conversation between me and WKRG, and I have the emails to prove it. On the 19th, it came to a point where I was losing out on other work because I was waiting for WKRG to hire me full time. And I was kind of flustered at this point. I was like, look, there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to keep waiting for you guys to decide to hire me on and give me my credentials. I got to take these other jobs. That was on the 19th. And they're like, okay, yeah, well, you know, we were just waiting on HR to do what they got to do. They just haven't done anything yet. And then January 20th, 7:30 in the morning, I get awakened by the FBI at my door. My sister opened the door, who was staying with us, and they came in, rifles at the ready and everything. That pissed me off. I'm just like, what? I don't get that you guys are coming in at me like I'm some domestic terrorist, like I did something crazy. And that's what it was. They had me on the couch. I was in my briefs, and they put me in my pajamas, and that's how they carried me off. The worst part was as soon as I walk outside across the street, you see one of the WKRG vehicles across the street that I was going to be working with. They didn't do any coverage on me outside of that I got arrested. They didn't have any live footage or anything, but it's just unfortunate that that is kind of how it went down. And then I spent the day there in some confinement area. I don't know where specifically, downtown Pensacola. And then I had my hearing and they told me that if I wanted to request to make a change in venue, that I would be stuck in this jail until that request was changed, or I can accept it and go with it and be let go that day. And I was like, I'm going home. You know, I accepted to keep everything in DC at that moment. And I was let go later that evening. And people don't seem to understand.
What was your communication with WKRG after that?
There was zero communication.
Zero. You never heard from them again. It's interesting. I have a friend of mine who is now a writer for one of the big shows on one of the big major cable news networks. I won't say which one. And he was being interviewed after January 6th. He was there on January 6th and he was being interviewed and for this particular writing position. And the issue that he was going through was a background check, security clearance, all the things that he had to go through with that. And so in talking to him about that, when I was asking him, you know, how that was going, he told me, well, the only thing I'm worried about was the fact that, you know, how they're going to look at me having been in DC on January 6th. And I said, well, the answer to the producer for that question is, where do you want your writers and your reporters? Do you want them sitting at home with their thumb up their ass, or do you want them actually on location of the biggest event of the year?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a shame that you've lost that opportunity and probably many others as a result of that. All right, so jumping forward from the day of the arrest, obviously, I'm sure you sought legal counsel at that point. Have you been able to make a living since then?
It took a long time. It took over a year. I mean, all of last year. First off, I worked with a company out here, and I won't say their name, but I worked for them religiously. I did things for them for free at the beginning, because I just wanted to show them that I'm a very loyal person. I wanted to prove to them that my work was worth anything. And they finally brought me on full time. And, you know, I would do events on the base, at the air shows for the Blue Angels. My career was kind of starting to go really well. And then after January 6th, they decided to say that I was a liability to their team. Mm. And they started hiring me on from that. And that was one of my main sources of income. So after that, every job that I would get, because mind you, being freelance, I was able to do whatever I wanted. So yeah. I would do odd end PA jobs. I'd work for different movie sets and things that I could find. But all of a sudden, I find myself not being able to get any work anymore. And it was easy to find who I was, what I did on any type of thing when it came to media. The media in general, when it comes to, you know, mainstream media and movies or anything like that, it's very liberally run. And when they know who you are, what you supported, it's quick for them to be like, no, we don't need you, no matter what you're, you know, how much experience or how well you are, what you do. So I wasn't getting any work for quite some time. And it was very, very stressful. Mind you, we were dealing with COVID and everything else. Really upset me, because the one thing that I could do was, just like most cinematographers, that was the one time that we were able to work. Versus everybody else, get footage, you can do drone stuff, you can do everything that most people can't do from a distance with the camera. And I'm being denied this work because of what happened that day. It took off, I want to say, the beginning of this year, after January 6th, and things obviously took a year for things to lighten up in my life. You know, I got back out there, started rebranding myself again. And a lot of people just kind of forgot about January 6th, which was good. And at that point, I started getting more gigs again and more, you know, photography jobs and cinematography jobs and doing intro videos. And it's slowly, my world in the video world has slowly gotten back up to a good point. I mean, I can't make a living off of it, but it pays the bills essentially right now. And we're good there. I wish it would be better if everything was still where it was at before. That's where we're at.
How long after your arrest date were you offered the first plea deal or given an opportunity to plead out on this thing?
It took a while. I think I went to like 3 or 2 status hearings before we were given an opportunity for a plea deal. I immediately, like as soon as the plea deal came across, I spoke to my lawyer and I said, I'm not taking a plea deal.
What did they offer you?
They wanted to offer me, they said, the best they can do, literally out of their mouths, the best we can do, 6 months, $500 restitution. Plead guilty to parading and ticketing. It was the one that had the least amount of time.
Right.
And as great as it sounds for some people, again, it's not for me.
So the offer was actually 6 months in jail. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Yeah. Now, see, this was early on. In fact, one of the earliest plea deals that came out of Florida, as a matter, was the grandmother that got 5 months in jail for parading and picketing. And and then over time, later plea deals became much more reasonable, at least because people were getting 2 years probation, maybe a couple of months of house detention, fines anywhere from $500 to $2,000, that sort of thing. But they weren't putting them in prison anymore. So yours must have been on that front side. You said you were the first arrest in Florida.
Yeah, so it was pretty early on. I just don't remember when. So it makes sense that one of my plea deals was probably the most ridiculous for the literal things that they're charging us with.
Now, since then, you know, we've had one victory back, you know, back in April, we had a situation here where Judge McFadden actually, in a bench trial, like what you're going to be experiencing here on Tuesday, he found that Matthew Martin, I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
He actually acquitted Martin on all four of those same counts for which he was charged. And the judge actually said, McFadden said, that it was reasonable for Martin to believe that the outnumbered police officers allowed him and others to enter the Capitol through the rotunda doors, and that the judge said that Martin's actions were about as minimal and non-serious as anyone who was at the Capitol that day. I assume that that's what you guys are hoping for.
Oh yeah, that's definitely what we're praying for sure. Now,
is there anything else to your defense that you're working on? I mean, obviously you have the background, and literally as a career, as a cinematographer, as a videographer, but you weren't yet working for a news station. So you weren't really a journalist and you weren't credentialed yet. So you didn't have that kind of layer of protection between you and, you know, some of these ridiculous charges, but nevertheless, you have the background. Are you guys trying to bring some of your background as a cinematographer into your defense?
I'll be talking more to my lawyer on Monday about the whole deal of it all, because it's only going to be a 2-day trial is what they're assuming, because of how much or how little of what is going to be going on. And we're hoping that does open the judge's eyes to the fact that, you know, I was only there to gather footage for media purposes. Like I wasn't a part of the crowd that was going through breaking stuff. And we really are hoping that this with the last acquittal, that we get something very similar, because it could do a lot. I mean, because Coy Griffin got the same judge. He got let go of him, and he got guilty of the trespassing charge. And I don't know if it's because of who he is or his background or anything like that, but it's important that these kind of things, these small charges, do get acquitted, because a lot of people, when you look at the footage and if you read some other people's interviews, and I'm talking about journalists that haven't been charged, the crowd that was inside the Capitol in certain areas, for some of them, they didn't have an option to come back. They were getting pushed forward. Mm-hmm. And once they were in the Capitol, they literally had to disperse from that area. I mean, you can, in any mob, you see when people are pushing forward, there's really no way of pushing back. So there's so many individuals that have the same four charges that I'm hoping that an acquittal on my end will mean acquittal for other people for the same reason, specifically for people who were just there because they were there.
Let me point out a couple of things from your charging documents that I thought were interesting and brought up questions, because I was there myself. I was on the west side. I was actually on the terrace where the battle line was taking place on the west side early on, that had already begun before Trump even finished his speech. I saw from your charging documents, the FBI said that you did not actually enter the Capitol building till about 3:15 p.m. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that was, you did not even get into the building until after Ashley Babbitt, she'd been shot half hour before that. And so because I was on the terrace by 1:15, 2 hours before that, when the battle line was going on. And then I was there when the initial breach took place, and when the surge came up underneath the scaffolding, up those steps, and then they went in those west side doors. And then from there, it was calm. It was like a day of tourism inside the building for the next, you know, few minutes anyway, up until Ashley Babbitt was shot. Then everything changed, and I was very, very close to where that took place. Nobody needs to hear my story right now, because my readers, my followers know my story, so I don't need to get into any of that. But just setting the context of the situation, when she was shot around 2:45, 2:46, the mood inside the building really changed. But it's a very, very large building. Where did you enter?
So I don't know specifics because that was my first time in DC, but I was on the backside of the Capitol, I want to say, where the scaffoldings were. That's the backside.
Was that's the west side. Okay.
So I was on the west side and I literally entered the exact same way. And I think you've seen the Luke Mogelson documentary. I entered the exact same window that he entered in.
Okay. So you went through that window. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into the Mogelson thing here in a minute, because I think that's an important part of your story. It's an important part of the comparison of why or how one particular journalist is treated differently than some of the other journalists that have been charged and some that haven't been. And so it's definitely worth a compare and contrast there. And you've actually got a video, which I'm going to provide the links for in the description here on this video. In fact, I think I just saw it yesterday, you comparing your own videos to those from Mogelson, a New Yorker reporter, actually just an independent who was stringer for the New Yorker that day. And so what I want to find out, though, is when you did enter the building, A, why did you go through a window? Because at that point, doors were open.
See, and, you know, I do feel stupid about that, because it wasn't until I saw afterwards, like video footage from after the fact. Well, first off, the door that I'm recording where they're going up those steps, mm-hmm. it was so crowded that I just didn't want to go through that area and deal with the chaos of what was going on in there. Like, it was just so much going on. And there's actually, I want to say there's two more filmmakers. And you guys just see one of them with me. We were talking the whole time. And we're like, let's try to find the easiest way to get in so we don't get hurt, get anybody else hurt. We don't drop our equipment. We don't want any of our stuff to get broken. Mm-hmm. The window where I went up, I wasn't even really thinking of going in right off the bat. I was just wanted to see what was going on. And I took a video and I took a clip of this picture of a Trump MAGA hat on the iron fence and a broken window behind it. I was like, this is gonna be a great image. And then there were the cops that were walking inside and out inside. And the next thing I hear is, we need you to keep moving. We don't want anybody to get trampled. Let's go. And I just kind of ran with it. And I went through that window with the other cinematographer. And then it wasn't until after, like I said, when I saw the video footage of everything around, that there was actually a door just to the right of me in between mm-hmm. those four sets of windows. Because I went in a window and I went out an opposite window. And I was just like, okay, that was really stupid, because, you know, there was a door that was there that was open. I didn't realize, again, I've never been to DC. I didn't see what was going on. I was just trying to follow a crowd. And most of what you see through my lens is what I was watching on my camera the whole time. So right. I was in moment, you know, behind the lens. So it was just kind of like, oh man, you know, that would have been a much easier way to just go through instead of trying to climb in through a window where mm-hmm. there was a chair outside and a chair inside to kind of walk you through. But I did feel kind of dumb after the fact that I found out there was a door that I could have went through, but I didn't realize it because there was just so much going on in the moment with my camera. And I was trying to get footage to see what everybody else was doing.
You are a stated conservative, stated Trump supporter. Are you still a Trump supporter?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I support what he did, and I have my thoughts and beliefs on future elections. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely not the same supporter that I was when Trump was the president and prior to him being elected the first time. I have questions. You know, I do feel now that Trump is a legitimate politician based off of the things that he's been doing. That's why I voted for him the first time, was because he was a businessman coming into the political world. And I thought that'd have been a great move. And as we saw, it kind of was for America. But now that I feel that he got the taste of the political mm-hmm. world, and now he's using it to the best of his benefit. And for me, that's a no-go. That's not why I voted for him the first time. The MAGA movement itself, there's just so many grifters and so many things that have happened that it just put a sour taste in my mouth towards what was going on. And now there's all these crazy little cliques all over the place that I'm seeing. And being what I'm going through, the people that have been there for me the most and have explaining things and kind of opening my eyes to a lot of people for things are individuals like you, my buddy Sean, other journalists who've kind of explained, like, look, this is what's going on both sides. This is where we're at. This is how we got to look at things. And it definitely has made my thought process a lot clearer for me. I don't even like being called a conservative anymore, to be honest with you. It's a very, very bad word now. You know, if you're a conservative, it's just as bad as being someone who we consider a snowflake or a liberal, just being a part of the Republican Party. And for me, you know, I have someone like Matt Gaetz, who's my district rep, mm-hmm. who has literally turned his back on me here. And I've talked to him, try to get his help. And he claims to be, you know, someone for J6, and he won't talk to me. So when I see in the political realm of things that it's all politics, it's all for the money, for your common good, not for the people, I don't see myself caring so much for politics the way I did or for the politicians the way I did anymore. And I really just don't want to be grouped in with conservatives or the MAGA movement or anything else. I really want to be grouped in as an independent, because that's how I feel. That's kind of where I'm at now.
Were you wearing any MAGA paraphernalia that day? No Trump hat? Well,
so on the 5th, I was. One of my buddies that I met there, everybody was making hats and shirts, obviously, for their own whatever. Mm-hmm. And he gave me one, so I wore it on the 5th, but on the 6th, no.
So you didn't have any flags or banners or overt political messages on your clothing? No,
okay. Like, you would have no idea that I was a Trump supporter or a conservative. I mean, you saw the picture that they got on me. I look like a terrorist. It's ridiculous how they made me look.
Well, no, you look like a white supremacist.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting targeted for. But, and that's another thing that people don't seem to understand, is because I was there without any MAGA gear or Trump gear on, and I'm documenting stuff, I was getting threatened with the other guys, and people were trying to take my camera from me, and they're like, what are you recording us for? Right. Like, no, right. Calm down. I'm an independent journalist. This is who I am. Look at my stuff. You know, I'm on your guys' side, but I still need to get this footage. And we were getting attacked just for having a camera out. And again, you know, you pointed out to me about Luke Moulkson and his iPhone, mm-hmm. and it made sense why he did it, because he didn't want to get attacked the way I was getting attacked. To say that I was there to influence anything, the only thing I was there for was to gather the footage. And I saw what it felt like to be a journalist on backside of a camera without them knowing who you were. And it was kind of disheartening that people were coming at me a certain way because I had a camera in my hand. You know, you start feeling, okay, I get what they're going through now. They're just trying to cover news, but that doesn't go to say that they weren't doing things the wrong way. But it's understanding now that people align certain things with certain people, certain aspects of life. And that's what happened that day for me.
Well, I think, you know, obviously the fact that you didn't have any paraphernalia or, you know, political messages or banners or carrying a flag around, that, I mean, that eliminates the parading and picketing charge as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that just makes that go away. Then for how long were you in that building?
Honestly, I don't know.
I think maybe it was mentioned in your charging documents about what time you actually exited. There was an interesting statement that the FBI affiant said, and I wanted to find that because it was really petty. I mean, they were digging for information to try and find something that you did wrong. And I did a cut copy and paste on something that they wrote down. At some point, he says in here that approximately a minute and 40 seconds into your video, let's see. Oh yeah. Rivera states, "Hey guys, if you're on here, share this live because I'm about to take my ass to the middle of the state capitol."
Yes.
And see what's going on, where they are trying to jump in. That was okay, I've got a camera. I'm a videographer. I'm going to take myself into the middle of this stuff and capture.
Yeah, that's the thing, is before January 6th, I had huge followings on both Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. TikTok's the only one that's still going strong. But a lot of people came to me for coverage. I mean, that's what they did. I started with Lexit. I started making a name for myself. I started doing these kind of things, and people wanted to see what was going on. And I was there and I was documenting it. When I said that, I was on the Capitol grounds, I guess, at that point, but at the very bottom the grass was when I said that, because we saw a crowd of people already pushing their way in. Mind you, when we got information that there was something happening at the Capitol, we were told they're storming the Capitol as we speak. Yeah. We were still at a little sub shop getting lunch. So I wasn't there for any of that. So that's when I went to where we were at, that's why I said it. I was being honest. I wanted to get footage so everybody could see what was going on. You know, they're trying to make it seem like maybe I knew what was going on, whatever they need to say, but it's ridiculous, like you said, that they're trying to find anything they can to make a story out of what didn't actually happen for me that day.
Just to get away from the building, and let's get into some other aspects of this really, really quick. As I said earlier, you did not enter the building. I was already out of the building. I'm the one that actually captured the video of Ashley Babbitt being taken out on the gurney from the building. That's my video. So that was exactly at 3:00, and you didn't even enter the building until 3:15. Mm-hmm. So what was the atmosphere like inside the building during that time? Because I had already exited. I was in there the early part of the entry into the building when people first breached that first wall or that first window and door on the west side. And then, so I captured essentially about a half hour of what was going on inside the building until Babbitt was shot. And then everything changed. Weapons came out. Officers, every officer in my camera frame at that point had weapons drawn after the, you know, the shots were fired. What did you see at 3:15?
It was definitely nothing like that where I was at. When I was in, I mean, you again, that window I was going through, you had officers walking up and down that aisle with us. And that's why I went through the window. I thought it was one of the actually the officer that's in my film. I believe it was him that said to keep moving through. Again, that's what I was under the impression of. That's why I went in. That's what it was. It was officers directing people to stay out of certain areas, in certain areas. But there wasn't much talking as far as get in, get out. It was just kind of a traffic. Like everyone keeps saying, it was kind of like a tourist attraction, which it was. Mm-hmm. And in my video footage where the cops are just talking to people. There's other footage of mine where cops are taking pictures with some of the people. They're not doing anything. Even saying they're directing somebody is a bit far because they were just kind of watching everybody go here. I know at one point in my video, there's a guy that starts going and the cop goes, no, keep going that way. You can't go down this way. And that was probably the only time I remember hearing an officer say that you couldn't go somewhere, but he still directed us inside the tunnel. And then that's all it was. And towards the very end of my video and even one of my clips, you see down the hallway, a handful of police officers standing line by line on both sides. They're not saying anything or directing anybody to do anything. And that was pretty much the entire scene while I was in there up to the point. I mean, when I left, there was more officers finally coming in. And then I'm just walking out. So my whole thing, I walked in, got footage from inside and walked out. It was really quick. The craziest thing you heard inside there were the people that were screaming freedom and singing the national anthem.
Right.
So it wasn't my side, my video, the time that I was in there was not nearly as chaotic at all compared to everything else that was seen. Actually, it wasn't until I was inside when my wife finally was able to reach me on the phone and she told me, hey, you know, someone was shot and killed. And I'm like, yeah, we haven't heard anything or know anything. And that's when I was just like, I'm going to get the last bit of footage and I'm heading out here. That's just at this point.
At any point, were you ever directed by a police officer to leave the building?
No, not at all. At the very end too. So remember I said I went out another window. When I'm going out, you can hear me talking to the police officers and I'm like, hey, thank you for what you do. Please stay safe. They're like, hey, you stay safe too. Thank you. And they're walking me out. They're not afraid of me. They're not freaking out. They're not screaming at any of us to leave. They're literally just watching people do what they were doing.
Did you back up your video before your SD cards and such were taken?
No.
Do you have that video?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay. So you were able to reacquire that from through discovery.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so you got it all back, at least the video.
Yeah, essentially I got all the videos back that I have.
My point being is you have evidence of that conversation with law enforcement.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's important. that's why I asked that question there. It's been really interesting because obviously I have been tracking and talking to many other independent journalists involved in January 6th, some who have been charged, some who have not been charged, and they've all been treated in different ways. Some were, like yourself, were arrested, no announcement, no pre-warning whatsoever.
Right.
Some were invited in for interviews with the FBI. Some were credentialed, some were not. Some of their credentials had nothing to do with being at the Capitol whatsoever. And this is where I want to go now talking about Mogulson, because Luke Mogulson is an independent journalist. Actually, he's an award-winning journalist. He's done war coverage. He's had some pretty big gigs, and one of his primary sources that he's written for and written some big articles for has been the New Yorker. And of course, he was there like every other independent journalist that day. The difference probably between himself and you and myself is that he had a background with the big name, you know, organization. Yeah. I did a lot of research on him early on because when I thought the charges were coming my way, I was gathering all of the details about all of the independent journalists who were being charged, who were not being charged, what their credentials were, what they weren't, their backgrounds, their circumstances, what they did, what they didn't do, where they were, what they saw, what their politics, all of these things, because all of these things were important to me in terms of building my own potential defense in terms of what I saw as selective prosecution going on between one independent journalist to another. So Mogulson was a big focus for me because he obviously has a background and has credibility. But he was doing exactly the same thing that you and I were doing that day. He was there just to, because there was a big deal going in. Didn't matter what his politics were. Didn't matter what yours are. Doesn't matter what mine are. The fact is that was the place to be. If you were in journalism, that was the place to be on January 6, 2021, period. Regardless of what your political bias is as a journalist or your credentials as a journalist. And so that's why I was there. That's why he was there. That's why you were there. So the bottom line is that in an interview that he did with Terry Gross on NPR, he actually said these words. He said, I was essentially there using my phone as a notebook. In other words, he had an iPhone and that's what he recorded with. Now I had a tripod and I had a microphone. I had an actual microphone that hooks up to my iPod. So I went pretty streamlined. I didn't carry any big equipment with me, but I was doing everything from an iPhone. I had the backup battery and as I said, as a tripod. And then I had a microphone because I intended to do some interviews on, you know, street interviews with people that attended the event. Not knowing that what was going to transpire that day was actually going to happen. That changed everything for all of us. But that was what I intended to do that day. In your case, being a professional, because I'm not a videographer, I'm a writer. So you're being a professional videographer, you showed up with professional gear. And so you recorded images, video. Mogulson recorded images. Now he obviously had a source to release what he got to a much higher profile. And as a matter of fact, he has some of the most famous video from the entire day because he was in the Senate chamber that day.
Yeah.
And he captured, you know, the QAnon shaman standing up at the podium there in the Senate chamber, doing his, you know, yelling and doing his, you know, saying the prayer that he led, you know, the guys in prayer. So he caught some of that that imagery. But there's an interesting thing that I brought up, and I don't know if you knew this or not before I shared this with you via private messages, is that Mogulson likely, because of his background, has a government press credential. But what he does not have is he does not have permission to actually be on the Senate floor under any circumstance. Even as a credentialed journalist, he has to have permission from the Sergeant of Arms. And I have read the code. I have actually read the Senate rules on that. No journalist can be on the Senate floor without express permission. And I think that if I remember correctly, the last time a journalist even asked for permission to be on the Senate floor was back in the Johnson administration, and they were denied, and he was denied access. And so the point being is that even though he is a credentialed journalist, he was in violation of his own credentials to be on the Senate floor that day, but he was obviously working for an organization that is going to be more sympathetic to the preferred narrative of that day. His own political bias is one and such that is going to probably not get him in trouble. He didn't come to the same conclusions that I came to in my, you know, in my story that he came to in his story that he wrote. So it's, or at least our observations were seen through different biases. And that's just the way it works. But you did a video. I saw it yesterday, about 4.5 minutes or so of your images side by side with his images. And you basically were asking the questions, what did I do differently than him? And why was he not charged and I'm being charged? You tell me.
It's obvious bias. I mean, you know, after reading everything that you sent me, knowing that they used his footage for Trump's impeachment, it makes sense. It's all political. It all comes down to politics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's as far as I can get with it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing different outside of, like you said, him being as well known as he is. But what we did to include friends of mine who are also journalists doing the same thing you and I were there doing. Again, they're not on this far left leaning scale, and they're being charged or questioned by the FBI, and just like yourself, you know, being questioned but not charged, but you're still being antagonized or harassed by them.
Now, Mogulson did use in his story in the New Yorker, he used all the right words, you know, insurrectionists and such as that. He does obviously come from a left-leaning bias in his perspective and his observations of the day. He did say something to Terry Gross on the NPR interview that I will give him credit for. And I didn't want to bring him up without at least providing the fair and balanced side of this, because she did ask him if that he was subpoenaed, would he testify in any of the trials or the cases related to January 6th? And he answered, and I'm going to quote him directly from the NPR interview. He said, "I would fight it again, like, that's not my job." And I think that once journalists start cooperating with law enforcement, especially federal law enforcement, in prosecutions against their subjects, that will ultimately have a negative impact on the ability of journalists to do their work objectively and with integrity that eclipses whatever kind of immediate benefit there might be to any individual trial or prosecution. So there we go. Recognizing he has a bias, I'm also going to give him credit for what he said in that regard there, that he would.
I can add to it. If I can add to it, the one thing is I'm not going after Luke Mulkerson. I'm not saying that he deserves to be charged or deserves this and that. No, what I'm saying, why is it that certain people were charged when someone like him wasn't? And I'm looking at it on the basis of what we filmed. Yeah. And that's all it is. Like, if they're going to, you know, even my lawyer said, you know, it's one of those cases where if everybody's speeding and you're the one that gets the ticket, not everybody's going to get the ticket. And I understand that.
This is what I would say to your attorney or to mine. If my attorney used that line on me, I would say, yes, that's true. Because that individual law enforcement officer, that traffic cop, only has the opportunity to chase down one guy as 100 other or 1,000 other cars speed by in the process. But in this particular case, they're making those arrests later based on video evidence. And so this is not the same thing as a traffic cop situation, because at the end of the day, as I've said before, I've compiled quite a list of independent journalists, those who I think did some, there's some guys that did some fairly questionable things. There were guys that were in questionable locations for reasons I would like to know. I want to know how they knew to be where they were at the right place at the right time. There were journalists, credentialed guys like Mogelson, that had no more reason to be where they were than I did, and they weren't charged. I was threatened with being charged, and you have been charged. And so there's three separate handlings from the Department of Justice of individuals doing essentially the same thing. All three of us had different backgrounds, but all three of us were doing exactly the same thing. And all three of us have had different circumstances related to January 6th and how the Department of Justice have approached all of us. So sometimes you can't, in a court of law, go, well, what about so-and-so?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do that. But I'm hoping that comparison is able to be fairly made and to say, okay, you know, this is what happened for this journalist and this journalist and this journalist. And I don't know if you're going to be able to do that or not. Certainly, I would think if you can and you get a fair judge like this other guy, I think it was Judge McFadden, and if you get somebody who looks at this situation, and in your case, never at any point were you told not to come into the building, never at any point were you told to exit the building, and in fact your only exchange with law enforcement were very cordial, and then on top of that, all you did was do what you set out to do in the first place, which is to go and document the event. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in the early days of what was going on, they were much more aggressive in the arrests and the charges. And so you got caught up in that first wave, obviously the first in Florida. You were definitely the first wave. And as I said before, in my case, I didn't even get an interview request till 9.5 months later, which is amazing, because I published my first video that night. You know, my first video went out on YouTube that night as well. And I was getting, like probably yourself and everybody else, people were turning me in left and right. I don't know of any personal friends. I don't know if I have had any personal relationships, but I didn't have any. There was no reason for any of my personal relationships to turn me in, because I was open as I could be, you know, on all of my social media platforms and my blog sites and, you know, everything else. I was wide open about what I was doing that day, writing about it. And so many people, you know, all the sedition hunters and those sort of people were all, you know, hashtagging or tagging me with the FBI. So they knew about me for a long, long time before they ever called me in. But in your case, you got the more difficult treatment with the guys showing up at your door. And then obviously I'm sure they led you out on the perp walk in front of the cameras. Was that captured by the local news media?
No, that was not.
Amazing that they didn't do that, because you said that one station was in fact there, but they didn't capture
that. That was the one thing that made me think, like, You know, some people are like, oh, they did it on purpose and they're the reason why you got in trouble. And I feel that way. But at the same time, I think that they probably feel, I feel that they feel bad that it happened the way it did. Because when it all did go down, again, we saw them across the street, but there was no cameras. And then when I came out of my court hearing, they weren't there. WEAR and Pensacola News Journal were there. Mind you, WKRG is a local Mobile, which is over the bridge from Pensacola. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was going to work in Pensacola for them to capture that stuff. I believe, if I remember correctly, they are in competition with WEAR. So they're more of a, their bias is more right-leaning than it is left-leaning. I feel that's what they're doing. Also, it's possible they didn't want to get caught up with it all, you know, knowing that they just hired me. Now this is going on because I had, like, again, a week before I got arrested, they were trying to do an interview with me and bring me on so I could talk to them about my situation in DC. Who knows what happened? I do know the people that have constantly lied about my case, lied about me. That's WEAR and Pensacola News Journal. You know, they've made me out to be the most evil person in the world. You know, WKRG didn't do that. So I do give them a little bit of credit for that. So
have you had a legal defense fund through this process?
Yeah, I have a give, send, go / mm-hmm. Jesus.
Go ahead and tell me, say that one again.
It's give, send, go / Jesus Rivera.
And be sure and send me that link and we'll put that in the description as well of this video. Okay. And then in addition to that, I'm going to include a couple of other, your videos also in the description. You know, I have to go through the camera and I'm horrible about this, JD, because I'm not a video guy. I would rather be writing than doing podcasts. My followers, my listeners, my readers know that. They know that I bemoan this new world where you kind of have to do this now. But, so I'm horrible about getting people to come in and, you know, be sure and hit like, and be sure and subscribe and all of those things. So I got to remember. In fact, I almost never remember to say any of those things, but I am going to include your information in the description below. Would encourage everyone to be sure and like this video, be sure and subscribe to this channel. And then I'll have, as I said, all of your information as well. And then just do me a favor and please let me know on Tuesday what happens.
Tuesday will be the government doing their stuff, and then okay. Wednesday will be, so Wednesday afternoon we'll know at Wednesday. That point I'm innocent or guilty of any charges. And then I did give Stu Peters the first run for the after the fact, and then I'll make sure to let you know as soon as I'm done talking to him. I'll come talk to you.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And look, obviously best of luck to you, and we'll be keeping you in our thoughts and prayers. I know we're not supposed to say that phrase anymore, but we will do that for sure. I know my listeners, my readers will do that. And we absolutely hope the best for you. And I hope that you do in fact get a fair and honorable hearing, even though this is a bad week, obviously, because the J6 committee is ratcheting up, and tomorrow night they're going to do their first big, you know, national television release of their quote unquote findings. And that's going to be I'm not going to say what I was going to say. So your trial is happening as this is all beginning to unfold. So hopefully there won't be a crossover influence between the two, and you'll get a fair hearing from the judge. So, all right. Blessings, man. Thank you very much. And we're out of here. Take care.